Welcome back to the Batter Up Podcast. My name is Will Pelagic, Willie P here from 92.9 The Game, alongside Caleb Johnson and Joe Patrick. We are your home for the Atlanta Braves, a Radio.com exclusive podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Willie P Style. You can follow Joe at JAPatrick200, and you can follow Caleb at ATLJohnson18. Kind of picking up where we left off last time, guys, we ended in a rather weird place. We were talking more about food and
per usual
apartment living and all these things that are away from the game.
The Cast Iron Chronicles?
My question to you is, what have you guys been cooking since we last spoke?
I had a nice bowl of ramen for lunch. It was delicious. And anyone who hates on ramen because it only costs like 12 cents per package or whatever can get out of here, because ramen is awesome. And it's so here's the thing about ramen. You have to buy the ones that have the least amount of like English language words on them. That's like I don't know what I'm eating, to be honest, right now, but I just know that it's very delicious.
Why do people hate on ramen? I've never heard
I think,
people hate
I think
ramen.
People just dismiss it because it's so incredibly cheap and affordable and delicious. But it may, because it's so cheap, people are like, eh, ramen. You know, it's kind of like Spam or something. Spam is bad.
It's usually one of those foods that they throw in and say, like, it's, you know, what you eat in college.
Right.
You know, when you're broke and have no money, you know, you go buy the 50 count of the top ramen from, you know, Kroger or whatever.
Broke and no money. That's us now. So like,
right? Yeah.
How does, COVID back to college days? Yeah.
How does that again? I've graduated to some of the, you know, the ramen like restaurant places, like the ramen bowl places. Those are really cool. And the fact that they have capitalized on that and turned ramen into a quote designer food, that's the biggest freaking coup in the history of food.
For sure. I actually had a million-dollar idea. You know, when you think of these things sometimes, whether it's food or like a certain type of restaurant or whatever, and I guess this is actually already a thing that happens, so I'm not going to be able to profit off of this at all, but I've always thought that you can make a freaking amazing, huge chain of restaurants that does ramen that is basically to set up like a Chipotle. And you can choose your broth, choose your toppings, all that kind of stuff. It's very easy to make. You can take it on the go. It's pretty easy to... You could actually just, like, put it in a cup and, like, drink it. And just, like, eat the noodles and drink the broth at the same time. Convenient. Delicious. It's just a great meal.
I went a step further than ramen. I made my world-famous baked ziti on Sunday. I don't know if you guys saw that on...
yeah, I told you, you've been watching too much Sopranos.
Yeah.
Stir the gravy.
Dude, well, all right,
also, I love the fact that you're like, I don't know if you guys saw it, you know, I just happened to throw it in the group chat and made sure you saw it as I was going step-by-step process. Yes, we saw it. Yes, it looked delicious. And it added a little something extra because I just started The Sopranos like last week and I've made it through a full season. So
you watched it before?
No, never have.
It's so damn fascinating, man. There's no better character in my mind created in American television than Tony Soprano. The internal conflict with that guy is just otherworldly.
It's interesting, but it's also very fitting to the late 90s, early 2000s. And I love going back and, like, because I watched The Wire probably a few months ago and went all the way through. And it was like, wow, just how far we've come from where I used to think, like, oh, 2000 was just a couple years ago. And now that's 20 years ago. And so it's just, yeah, it's strange to see those shows and just how people went about their normal business to where we are now. But it's a fun little, like, just going back in time.
What's great about The Sopranos is that it's really like a comedy, but it has these very obviously heavy and dramatic things that happen, plot lines, and obviously and just general themes. But it's like funny, and that's what separates it from The Wire for me, just in terms of being different. I still prefer The Wire over the two, but it has like this like comic element to that kind of goes throughout everything.
The one thing, a buddy of mine who hadn't ever watched it and is watching it for the first time said he didn't realize that the psychiatrist had such a big role. Like that's something that I think people who don't watch The Sopranos, they realize that part of it and the mental health part of it actually have a pretty big role in that show, a real centralized role. And that part of it, I don't think is something that, if you haven't watched it, people immediately realize.
Yeah, I definitely thought like it was just, you know, mob crime kind of show. I didn't know how much the psychiatrist was a part of it. Also, it is really fascinating to see how much we've evolved in 20 years when it comes to mental health and how we deal with it. Because, wow, were they ever, like, horrible with how, like, just the fact that they wanted to, you know, essentially off Tony Soprano because he was going to a psychiatrist in
right,
the first
yeah.
place. Like, just like, wow, okay.
Sign of weakness. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Like, I am very thankful to be living in 2020, kind of where we are now. Kind of going back to the food thing, though, we were talking about earlier, I dabbled into something that actually worked out really well. A lot of businesses, I know like Waffle House and Longhorn specifically are the two that I was aware of, are like selling their own meat so you can go cook it yourself.
Wow,
that's brilliant.
Yeah, and so this past week, I am a little unfamiliar. You know, I haven't stepped off too much into the like grilling my own steaks and things of that nature. Obviously for reasons we talked about last week with, you know, being in an apartment, that kind of thing. Well, I went over to my parents and before I went there, I grabbed some Longhorn steaks and
nice.
And we seasoned them up ourselves and cooked them to a good medium temperature. And they were like really good. I got the best, and I don't know if my mom said this because I cooked them because I'm her son, or because she actually believed this. But she was like, "Ooh, this tasted better than it does at Longhorns," and I was like, "Yep, that's all you had to say. That
wow.
is all you had to say."
Mom is trying to score some points,
right?
Mama Johnson is.
Yep, for sure.
That's crazy. I've heard of a couple of restaurants doing that. You know, like take and make your own. I think a couple of the local bars and restaurants are doing that here in Midtown. I think I heard the Palm is doing that too. The inspiration for the baked ziti didn't come from me watching The Sopranos, ironically, Joe. It was more. I've gotten myself into a bit of a YouTube rabbit hole with this one. I guess he's a YouTube recipe guy. His name is Pasquale Siriappa.
Never heard of him. And I'm very into the YouTube food game. So go on.
He's got a Facebook page too and does Facebook Lives and stuff like that too. And he's, I think he's like 75, 80 years old and he lives in Jersey. And he's full blown Italian. He's from Osara. And he has all these amazing recipes. Like I was thinking of you the other day, Joe, because you did on Twitter, you did the aglio olio recipe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is like the greatest food, like the greatest cheap food
it's
thing
like
when it comes to
three ingredients. Yeah.
Three ingredients, olive oil, garlic, and spaghetti. My mother used to make that for me all the time whenever I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So easy.
So delicious.
I grew up with a different life then.
Well, my mom never made that for me. That was never a thing for me. I just found it on YouTube somewhere one day. I think it was Kenji Lopez Alt was the first one I saw making that.
The best though with him, this guy Pasquale, is that he has this very deep Italian accent, and he always begins every video. He's like, "Hello, everybody! Today we make a nice dish. We make spaghetti carbonara."
See, I trust that guy.
Yeah, right.
You know, like if I'm gonna, yeah,
he has instant credibility right away, and he had this baked ziti recipe that he did on Facebook Live last week, and I was like, I'm doing that. And so I got the, you know, went out Saturday, got the two big tubs of ricotta cheese and 2 pounds of ziti, two big pans, and made my own sauce, the whole bit.
I knew it would taste good because when you sent it over, I could only hear it. And just the way it sounded when you stirred it, it was like that. It was like the glooping, like the, you know, just like beautiful sound.
And a lot of times, too. Usually I have to, because I'm not a really big chunky sauce guy, a lot of times I have to go in with the hand blender and immersion blend it.
Yeah.
But that sauce broke down so much, I didn't even have to touch it other than just stirring it. It was amazing. San Marzano tomatoes, that's the key. You got to use the meaty San Marzano tomatoes. Huh. But
the more you know.
That's exactly it. We'll get you there, Caleb. We'll graduate you to the Italian Italian way of thinking. Drastically transitioning to where we're at right now in terms of baseball, we are no different or in no different a place than we were a week ago when we last chatted, guys, because of the fact that we still don't have baseball, we don't have a date set. And I also think that some of the other leagues have continued to kind of kick the can down the road, not in a pejorative manner, but just because they still don't know when they will be able to resume having events, whether they'll have fans or not. The, I guess, target for some of these leagues is mid-June. That's where the PGA Tour is looking at right now and having tournaments without fans, and the MLS is looking at something similar as well. Still nothing from football, baseball, or basketball in terms of a resumption of play. My question to you guys before we get into some of the financial things is, you know, where do you think we stand now in terms of having a season of any sort right now when it comes to baseball?
I'm still hopeful. I mean, nobody knows, right? But like MLS, I think there were rumors that league last week that they could resume, or that they were kind of targeting a mid to late June resuming of the league in some form or another. It probably would not be all of the games, but obviously there are less games and more calendar dates for them to do something like that. You know, obviously we're not going to get something that resembles what a normal baseball season would look like, but I just find it hard to imagine that there won't be something done to be able to bring in some sort of revenue in some form or fashion.
Call me a skeptic, but I still stand kind of where we left off last week, where I don't know that we have enough testing or whether we're going to get enough testing. Also, we're obviously still waiting on a vaccine. So with those things still left up in the air, I'm a little confused, or not little, I'm a lot of confused how we're setting dates without those questions being answered. Like it kind of seems like we're just arbitrarily looking and being like, you know what, it would make sense if 4 weeks from now we're better off than we are now. And it's like, well, hopefully that's the case, but we honestly don't know. And so maybe we should stop with the dates. I think we kind of talked about that before on mm-hmm. here is, you know, let's stop with the dates. And, you know, let these, major league teams kind of figure things out amongst themselves along with their players association, so that we can get something going rather than getting people's hopes up and coming up short.
Well, the other part, and we've talked about this in a couple of other podcasts, but I feel like a lot of the decision is out of the hands of the commissioners. Like, it's being put in the hands of government leaders, governors, and the president, and things of that nature. So my fear is that one of these leagues is going to go rogue and say, you know what, we need to make money, we need to do something. And Caleb, you pointed us to the article that took place in Forbes, where even if they started the season on the 4th of July, the Braves would be operating at around a $60 million loss when it comes to expected revenue that they would have gotten during the 2020 season. Put that, in fact, also in concert with the fact that, you know, there are teams, obviously, that don't operate with a surplus and don't operate with the ability to create profit as easily because of the fact that we've had an attendance problem in the sport for the last couple of years and things of that nature. Granted, prosperity is at least before the pandemic was at a high for baseball. They were seeing a lot of renewed growth, but the fact that even a July 4th start, which again is still skeptical at best right now, the Braves would be operating from a significant downturn right there.
I still have to think that even with that, you know, everybody's going to be operating under the assumption that there will be major losses this season. I think that the Braves are actually relatively well positioned for something like this because of the fact that they don't have a ton of like long-term big mega contracts that they had signed. Like if you think about the Twins having just gone kind of above and beyond to go grab Josh Donaldson, or the huge contract that Gerrit Cole just signed with the Yankees. Like, all there isn't that long mega deal, and obviously those two contracts in particular are not kind of the same thing, but I think you guys get my point that there's not like this like huge burden that is now going to kind of pull the franchise down as far as the budget is concerned. You know, you've got some long-term contracts in terms of Ozzie Albies, Ronald Acuna, but those are very, very, very team-friendly deals. So I think that those will always be team-friendly deals no matter what economic kind of circumstance we're under. I feel kind of optimistic about the Braves, not this season, but just kind of forecasting down the line a few years. You know, you've got a Freddie Freeman contract you're going to have to negotiate. You might get that at a discount now. Now, of course, everything is relative in terms of the bottom line and what you pay him. But I'm optimistic about the Braves' situation heading down, you know, 5 years down the line.
Yeah, I think the Braves are definitely set up better than other teams, especially piggybacking off the fact that they had a really successful 2019, because in this Forbes article that was written about the fact that the Braves, you know, are, if the season is set to start in July, will lose about $60 million, they said, you know, the Braves profited just on, as far as the team goes, they profited about $24 million last year. If you throw in the fact of the Battery, which, you know, Liberty Media owns and is kind of included in all of this, they earned a profit of about $54 million last year. So it's one of those, yeah, they're set up better off than many other teams. And even with the fact, I found it interesting, even with the fact that they are set up to make a loss just about, you know, like many other major league teams are, they are still at least somewhat concerned about paying their employees for the time being, whereas many other teams are going to be, you know, going with Commissioner Manfred's ruling that after May 1st, you don't have to pay your a lot of your staff. So I think it's rather interesting that you know, with what they've done in 2019, that they come into 2020 and aren't panicking and maybe, you know, have some sort of a heart for the fact that, hey, we're all facing, you know, this pandemic. And so maybe don't freak out so quickly.
Yeah, well, the one thing the Braves did do, Caleb, is that they were one of the first teams to come out and actually say that they were going to pay their non-uniform workers, part-time, full-time employees through the month of May. We now, of course, have from Ken Rosenthal, The Athletic, saying that beginning on May 1st, teams are going to be allowed to start furloughing and cutting the pay of some of their employees too, and that includes managers and coaches at the major and minor league levels. And that's the part that I think has a lot of people somewhat scared is the wrong word, but I guess fearful of what is to come. We've seen this in other industries. We've seen it in our industry. We've seen it, obviously, in the retail business. But if it comes down to that, if we are so far off from a start of a season that we get to a point where employees are being furloughed, then I'm fearful of whether or not there'd be a season. Because I feel like if they don't have furloughs, that tells me they feel optimistic that they're going to start at some point.
Yeah, I was I was listening to an interview on CNBC like a month ago, probably. So kind of early on in this whole saga with they were talking to Scott Boras, and Scott Boras was saying that there's actually an incentive for these teams not to furlough, not to lay off workers, because when the season starts, the teams need to be able to be operational as quickly as possible. I do get the sense that if you do start to see major numbers of furloughs like that coming, that maybe that is a sign that the teams don't think they need to be operational as quickly as they do. On the other hand, you know, I kind of get it. Like, if you have scouts, there's no baseball being played. So, like, what is a scout doing? You know, like, okay, it's great to pay him, but I totally understand from a business perspective, like, the cost benefit of, you know, doing that kind of thing, I think makes a ton of sense. And hopefully in those cases, like with scouts and things like that, they would kind of be able to make their way and then be able to jump right back on board as soon as things start getting ramped up again. I think it's interesting, kind of going back on what Caleb said a little bit ago about, you know, just kind of putting dates on things and thinking that hoping that in a month maybe things will be different. I don't know if you guys have done this. It is interesting to kind of go back over, like, I don't know if you've looked back at like what we were talking about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, a month ago. It's amazing how quickly things change. And I do think that we will, in the next month, we're going to learn a lot more about not just the virus, but how it has actually impacted this country. And Major League Baseball has actually partnered with some researchers at Stanford and USC to do blood tests to see how, check for antibodies within players, players' families, stadium employees. I think there will be 10,000 people who have their blood examined, and that will give a good sample from across the country to see how far the virus has actually spread and infected people in different areas of the country. It's not going to be something that helps baseball speed up, or helps the return of baseball speed up, or helps kind of give clearance for players to go ahead and engage in activities or whatever. But I think it will be very helpful in allowing us to see, one, the potency of the virus itself, and two, if, you know, we should be hoping that there are lots of people that have, you know, been infected and have this virus, and I think that would help speed things along.
Do you feel better now, given the fact that we're in this pandemic, about the way the Braves structured their offseason, and not too specifically, not giving a bloated contract to Josh Donaldson?
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this a little bit earlier, but I think it makes a ton of sense. It's kind of fortunate for them, right, that they decided to go that route.
Hindsight's 2020.
Nobody saw it coming at the time, and I think there were a lot of people that were justifiably concerned about what happened there with that negotiation.
I was one of them.
Yeah, and especially that was before we saw a rejuvenated Johan Camargo and a really good-looking Austin Riley in spring training, so I was definitely concerned about it too. But now you look back on it and you think, ooh, man, thank God that the Braves didn't do something like that, and they're not going to be kind of, because it was already kind of going to be a gamble based on the amount of years that were being talked about, and now they're not worried about the years or the total outlay. So, yeah, it's kind of a perfect situation for the Braves to have landed themselves in.
Well, the other thing that goes into, you know, paying for Josh Donaldson, and the thing that sparked, you know, plenty of conversation between people who were watching the situation was the fact of Josh Donaldson's age. You know, like, that was a major concern, because as you get older, your body breaks down. That's just... That's all there is to it. So now we're getting to a point where, yeah, you may not, the Twins may not have to pay for half of Josh Donaldson's, you know, contract this upcoming year, but you were anticipating that out of that brand new deal he was just given, this was going to be the best year of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now that the Twins might only get half that deal, then, you know, you're not getting all of the value that you were intending on. So, of course, now Alex Anthopoulos looks like the smartest man in the room for the fact that, you know, he was willing to hold out and Josh Donaldson ended up in Minnesota.
It's such an interesting dynamic to me. It's something that I feel like I personally get caught up talking a lot about, how contracts are going to play out in this kind of thing, whether it's baseball or whatever sport we're talking about. But there is definitely a thing where it's like the passage of time chronologically in life is actually happening right now, even though a lot of these other parts of the game legally are frozen. But that doesn't stop, you know, players from getting a year older, or, you know, all these things. And for some players, it probably helps them that they kind of get this added time. But for a lot of players, it's going to hurt them that they're not either getting development, or they're not, like in Josh Donaldson's case, he's kind of losing some of the last years of his physical prime. And you do have to wonder also with regards to a guy who's had injury concerns like Donaldson, you know, if he hasn't been able to train the way he normally would to kind of keep his body in shape during this time, if that is going to have negative repercussions.
Time is a flat circle, Joe.
It's messing with my head, man. It's crazy.
Time is a flat circle. I think it was Jacob deGrom who also said something similar to that. He said the fact that this pandemic happens in the prime of his and other people's careers like that is rather fascinating. You mentioned, I can't remember if it was last week or a couple weeks ago, Caleb, but the Zach Wheeler thing. You know, Mike Trout has kind of come out in the same way because I think he also has a wife that's expecting sometime this fall, and the fact that he wouldn't be able to break away and attend the birth of his child, I think offers in another element of why I don't think the model that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, the Grapefruit League and Cactus League model, I just, too much can happen. You mentioned the fact that time still goes on. You know, things still happen. You know, people get sick and family members get sick and there are other things, you know.
Well,
or houses get stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, or if Mike Trout does leave because, I don't know, just speaking from personal experience, if my wife is pregnant and she's, you know, going into labor and about to have a child, I'm not staying with the team. Like, I'm going. So if Mike Trout is, quote,
you can,
unquote,
you can podcast on your phone with us, yeah, from the hospital room.
Yeah, but, you know, if Mike Trout is, quote, unquote, you know, being selfish by going to be with his wife, then he's stuck. You know, we're talking probably 2 weeks where he's got to be, you know, restart this whole process, the kind of thing that we talked about before. So it's just, it's insane that a guy could, you know, because we've heard of guys going on maternity leave to be with their wives for like a game or two, and people want to call them selfish, you know, for making that decision because it might not fit, you know, it might be in the playoffs or something, and it's like, sorry, my life doesn't, you know, coincide with this schedule that was already set in place. So yeah, it's kind of wild that you would set up something where if a guy were to choose to be with his family, he would be looked at as selfish and hurt his team in the same process.
But yeah, and here's the thing. I think this will be really interesting to kind of see how this unfolds over the course of time. Is like, let's say Mike Trout makes it perfectly open that he's going to be there for the birth of his child, and even if there is the Arizona Biodome, and if he leaves, he's going to have to miss, you know, a month in terms of quarantining and all that stuff. And he makes it open that he's going to do that. Angels probably still want to play the games, you know, because they're still going to want to be getting the revenues from the sponsors, you know, all these obligations that they have commercially. It's going to be very interesting to see. I wonder if you have a season like this, or some sort of half season tournament, whatever it ends up being, without some of the top players because of these reasons. And it's just like an agreed thing where it's like, okay, well, we'll just play some more minor leaguers. And at the end of the day, I think when we look at this season, well, we've talked about it on this podcast, but people are going to look at it differently, and people are not going to look at it, whoever wins it, if they're whatever competition it is, people aren't going to look at that team as like the World Series champion the way they would every other team. You know, it's going to be, they're just going to be the winners of this different thing that happened this year.
I expressed this concern earlier. I'm more concerned that it's going to look good. Like, is it going to be good baseball? Like, I think that's a genuine concern to have, because it's not enough to just be back. It's not enough to just be churning out content. We've seen the NBA struggle with this. They're trying to have these, you know, horse tournaments and the 2K tournaments, and they're all hitting like wet blankets. I mean, that's the part of it that I find most concerning, is that if Major League Baseball does come back, there's an inherent amount of pressure for the game to look good. And, you know, with a layoff that's going to have to take place with these guys and the ramp up, you know, I don't know how they go out about ramping up to play, if they have like a 2-week exhibition season or something of that nature. But that's, of course, an inherent risk, because you risk just as much of the season being lost because somebody else gets sick. I almost feel like it'd be more fruitful for them to just start playing games as quickly as they possibly can once they get the go-ahead. But I think there is an inherent amount of pressure on the game to have this look good.
To have quality. Yeah, to maintain
have
quality.
And no diminished quality. And I think that's a genuine concern.
Go ahead, Caleb.
Well, I was just going to add to the idea that Joe was kind of throwing out there of a lot of stars, you know, if they do decide to just you know, hey, we're not going to play because we don't find it to be safe. My mind went two different directions, which was one, you know, that conversation needs to be had behind closed doors between Major League Baseball and the Players Association, although unfortunately it most likely wouldn't. It would leak into the media. We would discuss it and then something would come of it. But then the second thing is the, you know, an idea of playing, you know, minor leaguers instead of major leaguers because some of those guys, you know, wouldn't, or a lot of them wouldn't play. My mind goes to, you know, like the movie The Replacements, where, you know, there's going to be so many contract issues with those guys. It, you know, we're not going to want to watch, because what is the one of the biggest complaints about, you know, the difference between the NFL and all of these other spring leagues that pop up is people, you know, they want the stars. They want the guys who are the best of the best. And, you know, there's a reason why I can go up to Rome and pay $3-4 for a ticket. And, you know, I can't do that when I go to Truist Park, you know, because of the level of competition. You want that, you know, you want the best of the best. And if you're not going to get that, it's not worth it.
It's going to be an opportunity for the players. We're going to find out how much power they have in terms of not just their bargaining power when we're talking about kind of temporary CBA for the season, but just generally, you know, how willing is baseball to play if not all players or the Players Association, you know, if there isn't like this very firm agreement between them that they all want to do this thing.
And that just popped another thought into my head, is how do you even handle the minor leagues? Because if the major league teams are taking the risk and either doing it in a biodome fashion or without fans, you know, a lot of these minor league teams, they don't exactly operate with a very favorable looking balance sheet.
Yeah.
How do they go about making a penny, and not just from the player development standpoint, but their own profitability standpoint? How do you structure that whole enterprise? Because that is a whole other question that I don't even think has even been broached yet by anybody in Major League Baseball.
Well, they struck a deal. I think we discussed before the fact that all minor league players are going to get paid at least like a minimum base salary for a select amount of time. But if I remember right, that runs up through like, I think either May 1st or May 31st.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, they haven't been able to work at anything out beyond that, because obviously we don't know anything. And now we're kind of facing that reality of we're not going to, you know, nothing's going to be getting started. We're hoping beginning of June, end of June, July, you know, we'll just keep extending the next month as it, you know, gets closer. But if they don't work out a deal, I hope those minor league guys are pinching their pennies, because, you know, money's not coming anytime soon if that happens.
What do you guys think about Ronald Acuña saying that he's going to play in the Venezuelan Winter League if the season's severely shortened or canceled?
I love his passion. But I think that's about as far as it goes. Yeah. I don't think it's – I don't.
Too
I think
much?
It would be,
too much for
I,
you?
First of all, I think it would be a broach of his contract.
No, it's not.
Is it not?
No, I looked into this because I was when I saw this, I had somehow completely missed that this was being discussed. The fact that he could go down and play, at least I'm going off the vetting that David O'Brien, who, you know, writing for The Athletic, what he reported was it's not a violation of his contract to play winter ball. The issue is, of course, where he would decide to play winter ball, which would be Venezuela, which, you know,
there are better places to
play.
Well,
yeah, Major League Baseball has, like, prohibited players in the past because of, obviously, all the political, you know, stuff, you know, turmoil. We'll use, you know, the very nice
Venezuela
word.
Has political turmoil?
Yeah, right? Well, okay. And Atlanta should be very familiar with this, whether it's with the Braves, you know, Ender Inciarte, Ronald Acuña, or whether it's Atlanta United with Joseph Martinez. Like, they're very familiar with the, you know, the political and economic issues that are going on down there. It's just the fact of if he would go down to play. Because when I first heard this, I was like, oh, yeah. Like, absolutely.
Same here. Yeah.
Ronald Acuna should go down to Venezuela and play, stay fresh, stay healthy, gets to play for his dad. You know, like, this is a perfect idea. And then it was like, wait a minute. I forgot.
Bogota is great in the month of December.
I know. That's
what you're talking about.
That's how I feel like if you want to kind of be, you know, the poo-pooer of something like this, like, what, you're getting in between him and his in the relationship with his dad? You know, it's like, you feel like the bad guy, but,
Yeah, well, so, now, the only way that this becomes a little murky is...
By the way, I totally said Bogota, I meant Caracas. I'm sorry. That was very dumb of me. I'm so stupid.
Come on.
Oh.
Come on.
You know my world capitals very well, although I amalgamated the capital of Peru with the capital of Venezuela. I'm
I was about to say,
so stupid.
Please don't give me that geography test because I will fail it. But yeah, when it comes to Ronald Acuna, like, my understanding is he's going down to Venezuela either way, whether it's to play or just to live while, you know, while players have this time off. So it is interesting. It's almost kind of like, well, I guess since you're down there, you know, might as well stay fresh. But
is he going down there?
That's the understanding that David O'Brien was given. Apparently, he tweeted that out. He tweeted that out on April 15th, when a responder said, "What if he goes to Venezuela and can't leave?" David O'Brien responded with, "He's going to Venezuela regardless. It's where he spends the entire off season this past winter. It's where his family is." So
that's interesting because I know that Atlanta United has come to an agreement with its players that they will all stay within the Atlanta area for whenever the season, you know, finally gets going or suddenly gets going. So that is interesting.
It's never good when you look up the country's Wikipedia page and next to the terms president, vice president, legislature, it all has in parentheses disputed.
Yeah.
Never good.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch The Last Dance?
I did.
No, I'm just not that big. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, of course. I think every sports fan on earth, I think, was watching it last night, or at least in America, was watching that last night. We're also so craving for anything.
I'm about to end a friendship of mine because he still says that LeBron is better than Jordan, which I find completely nonsensical.
You know, we had this discussion last night because you threw that my way, and if there's any one of us of the three of us who could swing the LeBron way, it would be me, I think, because I completely missed out on the Jordan era. Like, I was not old enough to be able to watch him.
But you also have a brain.
That's fine, but I got to enjoy watching LeBron live. And so, you know, to see that and then to see... I think it's one of those... I also mix off the court into my opinions of a person, and that just comes from, that started before I got in the media, but especially when I became a media member, that, you know, that weighed heavily on what I thought of a person, you know, was how they talk to other people and just how they act in general off the court or off the field or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that's what always swung my, you know, allegiance towards LeBron.
So you're holding Jordan being a jerk face against him, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, because, I mean, we saw plenty of it, you know, just getting a little taste in the documentary in the 2 hours last night, but also, you know, the things that he said previously. But I also love his sneakers, so...
I think it is interesting. There's obviously these big disparities between the eras, right? And a lot of that between Michael Jordan and LeBron is, you know, that is conveyed through the way that they played, the amount of points they scored, how they scored them, that kind of thing. But I think there's also, to your point about kind of the off-field stuff, is that there wasn't as much activism from athletes in that time. And I think that the main, one of the big reason why is because of social media. Like, they didn't have an outlet like current modern day athletes have to kind of speak their mind about things. And
I think there's also a financial element too, guys. I mean, because in the balance of time when Michael Jordan was playing in the NBA, that was probably the biggest escalation of the financial benefits to being an athlete.
If I learned anything from that documentary last night, it was like, you can say whatever you want about, you know, Ronald Acuna getting raked over the coals and his $100 million contract, but imagine, you know, Scottie Pippen, just wow, the fact that that deal that he signed was just so minuscule, you know.
He got hosed.
Yeah, absolutely. Hosed. Like, that was mind-boggling that I love learning little things like that that I didn't know just because I wasn't, you know, I wasn't paying attention like that. I was born during the middle of, you know, of the Bulls' reign.
You know, something that's funny to me, I was thinking about after watching that last night, was the fact that, like, anybody who played video games growing up knows that, like, Michael Jordan wasn't in a lot of basketball video games. I think he had, like,
roster player.
Right, yeah. He had his own rights, so, like, his name was never involved. And it's amazing that he still was as big as he was, obviously, like, the biggest athlete in the world, without kind of that aspect of it. And it's totally different than how, like, an agent or a manager would look at things now, where now it's like, give yourself as much exposure as possible. You know, like, you put yourself out there.
Bonds did that too in Major League Baseball. Bonds was not part of part of that.
Well, I was about to say, and people make fun of, like, who's the soccer club who just recently did it? Like, they pulled themselves off of FIFA or one of the games.
Yeah, I think Boca Juniors is not on FIFA in Argentina. I'm sure there's probably a collection.
Yeah, because they signed their rights, like, with a different game.
Yeah.
But, and you know, and how many people made fun of them for that? You can't imagine a single player doing that now.
Crazy. I remember the first time that Jordan was available on the video game, it was after he retired. That was, like, the legendary NBA Live game where, like, you put him in and he was a 99 basically and everything. So that is that's one thing I'll always remember. Anything else, gentlemen? Final thoughts? I'll start with you, Caleb.
Still horribly going along with my guitar playing. That's just, I've learned to play a song yet, but still working at it.
Nice.
Other than that, just waiting for sports to get back and a bit of normal life. Excited for the NFL draft because that'll seem like a little bit of life returning to normal. But yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, the NFL draft's going to be fun. I will actually be not in my apartment for once. I'll be in the studio, which will be exciting. Just to be in the bullpen again is going to be very, very fun.
I totally forgot to tell you guys. I was in the office on Friday.
Really?
I was in the office on Friday. I actually got to go to the office on Friday because we were having some technical issues. I guess, like, the cable went down.
Oh, yeah, there was a power outage. Yeah.
In the area. And so, like, they couldn't connect to the guys' home studios. And so they called me in basically to be the person to go on the air when the connection dropped down. And it was very eerie being in the studio. It was basically me, our underboss Sean Thompson, Craig Carlos Valentino, our producer for Dukes and Bell, and then Jarvis Davis, who I'll be hosting NFL draft coverage with on Thursday night. It was a very eerie feeling.
Sounds thrilling just to be out.
It was great.
To say, at least you had people around. I worked the shift running the board, and it, you know, it's just you by yourself with no one to talk to.
It's nuts. Well, we ask you again, if you follow us on Twitter at Willie P Style, at ATLJohnson18, and at JAPatrick200, and of course at 929 The Game, to ask questions. We will answer them as best we can. I know that we don't have a lot of baseball to go off of, but we'll kind of get some more historical perspective on some of the stuff involving the Braves and continue to try and ride this period out without any live sports or live events. But we hope we've kept you entertained over the course of the last couple of weeks, and we'll continue to do so with the Batter Up podcast. For Caleb Johnson, Joe Patrick, I'm Will Pelagic. Thank you so much for listening to Batter Up, a 92.9 The Game and radio.com sports exclusive.